Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 21st of October, 2020, and markets still very much in waiting mode in some respects and moving in quite interesting ways in others. If we take the equity market first, not a lot going on. We supposedly had this deadline on the stimulus news yesterday, but nothing, that sort of deadline came and went with no developments, and talks are still ongoing. Supposedly, the Trump administration willing to up its total a little bit, and the whole issue of whether the Senate Republicans will vote for that or not is an open question as well. You have to wonder, maybe some Senate Republicans would feel under pressure, those that are up for election here in less than a couple of weeks, which is about a third of senators. Any case, we don't know. We're none the wiser. The market seems to be somewhat hopeful, but we had a couple of very interesting stories. We'll start with that. There's so much, I think, to run through today. I'll try to keep a little bit of a tight focus here. Peter, we had Netflix earnings after the close. Let's talk about that first. And then we had this very interesting develop on the antitrust move against Google. Take it away.
Yes, as you can see here on slide two, and the Netflix Q3 earnings disappointed, and also on the outlook side. So revenue was basically in line, earnings per share disappointed. They had a 1 million euro global net change in global subscribers for Q3. They have a pretty steep forecast for Q4, actually 6.5 million net change in subscribers, which you can also see in the insert. That's from their earnings presentation from yesterday. So you see that big jump in new additional subscribers during the lockdown months of April and May, and then actually we've been trending sideways, which is quite unusual. But maybe a lot of the demand for this year was just front loaded. We're talking about a company that is valued at a valuation multiple of 4x the average company. With the competition heating up, and I know it's anecdotal evidence. I find content on Netflix more and more boring, and it's not only, I think, it's a Netflix issue. I think with just a growing fatigue with video streaming, it's, we always go in terms of consumer habits, we always go through these cycles of new excitement, and I think video streaming was a big excitement for many years, taking over from social media, which was the big thing, maybe 10 years ago or 8 years ago. So I'm feeling increasingly negative on Netflix business. How the stock will react, we'll have to see. The shares were down 5% in the extended trading. That will put it back into the low end of the recent range. It has been so in for the past 3 months. So very interesting developments. I think really Disney is hurting their business. So yeah, interesting times for Netflix, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then on the antitrust move, this came out, if I'm not mistaken, just before the U.S. Open yesterday. I mean, take us through what's going on here. The Justice Department and some of the state local attorneys general also taking a look at Google's practices. But actually, when I dug into this, and I haven't had time to read much on this, but the interesting connection being a lot of this is specifically geared towards Google's relationship with Apple. And it's a bit of a revelation how massive Google looms as a driver of Apple's profitability. I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah, so we know these are sources from The Verge, which is a US media. So there is a major source for revenue. In 2018, Google was estimated to be paying $9 billion to maintain the Google search engine to be the preset or pre or the default setting search engine on the Safari browser, and Apple being a giant in mobile devices is obviously a key partner for Google to maintain its dominance in the search engine space. It's estimated via this lawsuit from the U.S. government that between 15 and 20% of Apple's annual profits are coming from these payments, which is a pretty sizable chunk. And basically, what the antitrust case is about, it's actually going back to that big subcommittee on antitrust matters report that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the 449 pages report, which basically says that Google is a gatekeeper and they're using their dominance to lock out competition. But as you can see, Kent Walker, which is the chief legal officer, said to the Wall Street Journal yesterday that he thinks that the lawsuit is flawless. Sorry, it's deeply flawed. That's not a big surprise that they would have that angle. He says it's like countless other businesses we pay to promote our services, just like a cereal brand might pay a supermarket to stock its product at the end of the row on a shelf, which in essence, he's right about. But the big difference is that we don't have one serial brand controlling 97% of all search queries in the US.
Yeah.
So that's I think is the big difference. So I think your angle is interesting, especially related to Apple, because I find that actually more interesting than Google, because I think, as I said to you, maybe I'm a little bit cynical here, John, but as I said to you over the phone yesterday, they will put this into court for years, just like Microsoft did 20 years ago, and it will basically be a replay of that. But I think the Apple angle is quite interesting, because if you take Apple's multiples on a profit of $11 billion, we're talking about a market cap of around 200 to 300 billion that is coming just alone from that, or maybe even more.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you mentioned Microsoft, and that's the monopoly that just kept on going, isn't it? In so many ways, their whole browser side of things became irrelevant, and Google overtook that. But still, the operating system and all those and Office have been plenty profitable, among other Microsoft products. Let's get to other things that are moving and shaking in this market. And one of those is the dollar. We saw the dollar selling off yesterday, and especially interesting was that Eurodollar was actually moving higher before the dollar started selling off. And I think one of the key stories driving this was the news of a very heavy interest in the EU's first so-called social bond, which is the first bond issued under the pandemic recovery deal, which will be mutually guaranteed by. So it's directly from the EU. It's not a bond that's issued by an individual member state. And there was massive interest, 14 times oversubscribed, 233 billion euros of offers on a €17 billion issuance of 10 and 20 year paper. So that is a sign of interest, is for sure, in a safe asset in the euro, and would, all of the things equal, keep interest in domestic markets rather than looking elsewhere. So I think that might be one of the drivers there. And we're seeing Eurodollar well above 118. And I've got a slide on chart on slide 4. I think it's really a key move. This sticks, I think we're definitely looking at the full test towards the range high. I think the other thing driving the narrative is that we're going to see stimulus, whether it's now or whether it's a massive one after the election, or maybe even both. And we're seeing the dollar weakening on that front as we smell out a Democratic clean sweep. If we look at Treasury market, very interesting to think about, where if that's also what's driving yields higher, the thought that all the stimulus and dollar liquidity is going to mean higher U.S. inflation relative to a still pegged to zero a policy rate as the Fed pursues its average inflation targeting regime, blah, blah, blah. It's a good argument. I wonder, though, if there's an element here of the fact that treasuries have not really provided any offsetting returns for risk parity strategies and, you know, the 60-40 traditional equity bond allocations. And one argument in favor of that could be that this recent rise in volatility is requiring that risk parity models need to pair their exposure to fixed income. I'll put on slide 5 a little inset, the MOVE index, which is the index, Bank of America's index of bond market volatility. That saw all-time lows in recent months, but has now spiked considerably higher. And you're seeing on the right, you can see that these yields, 10-year and 30-year, are making major new local highs. There was one small high from June that is a bit higher still. But this certainly bears watching. It's going to bear watching for equity market valuation, for all manner of risks of volatility feeding into all assets. When you see the U.S. long yield, long end moving, it's very critical. This is the long end price of global money. So this means a lot across markets. So traders out there, please keep an eye on this index. And Ulay, I definitely want to get to you. But first, I have to talk a little bit about the Chinese currency. And I think that'll segue into your copper chart.
Absolutely.
Yeah, somewhat. We have the Chinese currency continuing to pound onto new highs against the dollar. Look at slide 6, just an incredible, you've even seen an acceleration in the dollar CNY downside here. I think there are a number of I'm not the only one coming up with these reasons, but I think there's a number of reasons for this to be unfolding. The first is, and the most sort of compelling, is the idea that China has gotten ahead of the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak in a way that other countries have not, clearly in the EU and the US and elsewhere, even in EM, and is sort of moving along with stimulating its economy and key areas, but overall keeping a rather tight policy. And so that diverges to a tighter policy rate, together with contrasting with the massive stimulus elsewhere. And if you look at what that stimulus is doing elsewhere, it's just, you know, showering the economy with piles of cash and ripping rates back down to zero. And a lot of that cash ends up being spent on PPE, on other things that are actually exported by China. So they're able to maintain a tighter policy in China, or they're doing so in any way. And then a lot of this cash without any sort of accompanying increase in productivity is ending up back in China. I think there may be an election angle as well. I'm not so sure on that front, but the idea is somewhat compelling that Biden will prove less tough, and he's criticized Trump's tariffs, et cetera. And then I think, yes.
John, I think on the whole China currency issue, I mean, when I look at this chart and you think about the China being the world's factory producing all our consumer goods in the Western world, I can't help wondering whether, I mean, unless Chinese companies are willing to absorb the strengthening currency and crush their profit margins, some of this currency strengthening will export inflation into the world, shouldn't it?
Sure, of course it does. And as well, it besides that, I think there's another side of this that increases Chinese consumers' purchasing power. And that's the angle, I think, one of the angles I think they're pursuing here. They see that strategically that U.S. and China are increasingly rivals, and they need to create a competing reserve asset and make sure that their currency is a viable and strong beacon of stability and strength in a world, and attract capital inflows. And that will help drive a completely different paradigm from here in the future. And I think that is one of the key aspects of this as well. I mean, the CNY
But that requires that you don't have capital controls. Otherwise, you cannot
yes.
be the currency.
Yes, right? But they could, of course, create some sort of a semi-offshore CNY, or use the CNH. They could create a digital currency that allows them to control the capital flows by tracking whatever. I just think that that's sort of a long-term signal we're seeing here. But I agree, of course, the practical on-the-ground reality right now is that there is no rivalry when you have a capital controls. And there also, you have to have a large deficit. You have to run large current account deficits to send money to the rest of the world. That's part of being a reserve currency. That's why the U.S.'s dollar has been as such for so long, the U.S. running those permanent deficits. But Ola, let's get to you. There has to be a linkage here, you would think, between this strong CNY and copper and some other commodities prices. Well, I guess there's an EV electric vehicle angle to this as well.
Absolutely, John. And just finishing off the renminbi story, just take a look at the yield on 10-year Chinese government bonds, 3.2%. That's obviously interest rates that anyone else would be longing for these days with such a low interest rate environment. So potentially also part of the story. But yes, on slide 7, just take a look at the correlation here between high-grade copper and Chinese renminbi on the top right. And you can see the recent recovery, or the recovery we had in copper has, since March has accelerated now in over the past month or so. We had a mini correction in early October, but the continued strength of the renminbi has most certainly been one of the supporting drivers. Remember that 50% of global copper demand derives from China. So as the currency strengthens, they can obviously pay a higher price for copper price in dollars. So that's one story. Also, we have some strike action still in Chile, the world's biggest producer, providing some underlying support as well. So as you can see on the chart, we broke above that September high yesterday. The key focus now, I think, is more on LME copper, where the market is getting close to 7,000, which is a big psychological level. And that would indicate potentially move up to around the 320 level. We're pretty close to that already. But it's also actually interesting to see that it's happening at a time where the fundamentals in terms of the contango has actually softened. We actually got a contango and it's been rising the last few days, indicating that the spot is actually the cheapest on the curve, which normally is a reflection of ample supply. So there's more to this story. And I think for now, as long as the renminbi continues to strengthen and as long as we have the strike action in Chile, then copper will stay supported, but we will have a reality check sooner or later. But as you also highlight, the green electrification theme is going to be, is not going to go away, and that will only strengthen the demand for copper through its use in electrical wiring and so on. So keep an eye on that one. But I think also another market that has been moving higher. Gold is moving higher, but it's more a reflection of the weaker dollar. It's not really breaking anything, but with a stimulus and a weaker dollar, that's obviously providing the backdrop for another attempt to break higher. So that's one we should be watching today as well. But natural gas is once again Highlighting its very volatile credentials. It's once again taking aim at the $3. We got colder weather in the US coming in, but same time also, as you can see in slide 8, we've seen quite a strong rally recently, both in European and Asian gas prices. And that's obviously improving the arbitrage between US gas into LNG and then for sending to the export market. So flows to export terminals have risen quite strongly now in recent days, and that's obviously reducing the amount of gas going into storage. So that's the underlying supporting story. So gas looks pretty healthy as we head towards the winter months.
Yeah, and I guess some of the production being slowed and shut in terms of new drilling because of the whole collapse in prices since spring. All right, Peter, one of the most favored single names to speculate in, to say the least, in the recent last year, let's call it, has been Tesla. The earnings are up here, are they not?
Yeah, they are up tonight after the U.S. Market close, and I think it's pretty given that they will post a new record for this company. More than $8 billion in revenue. We know that, so up more than 30% growth on the top line. The Wall Street is expecting earnings to improve by more than 200% from a year ago. A lot of anticipation. The bar is set very high. We know it's going to be a record because deliveries and production numbers was beating estimates for Q3. They still need to ramp up even further on a quarter-quarter basis. They need to increase deliveries by 25% on a quarter-to-quarter basis to deliver the 500,000 deliveries for this year, as they set out as their target. We'll have to see what they come up with in the outlook. I don't have a strong conviction on Tesla as I had on Netflix. I'm leaning actually towards a positive surprise for Tesla. I think they are probably masters of the universe to control the narrative, or maybe Elon Musk is probably the best one out there to control the narrative. And I think the narrative is still extremely positive on Tesla. They just got upgraded by S&P Global, which is looking at credit ratings as well. And they upgraded also their outlook for deliveries and production for next year to more than 800,000 cars. I think they are increasing their lead on the competition, although the competition is heating up. So 2021 is going to be a very exciting year. And we know, because as you also pointed out, we have said this a couple of months ago, that the options speculation in Tesla is just off the charts. So I guess the only thing I'm quite certain about in terms of Tesla is that volatility is going to be extremely high in the extended trading and tomorrow's trading.
All right. And we've also had this talk or look at the long yields today. Really, again, we can't underscore enough how important that is to continue to track for implications across asset classes. But you've pulled out a focus on that vis-a-vis the status for value stocks here. You've got something on slide 10.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the value stocks have been one of the most talked about themes in equities. It just continues to bleed. And when will the bleed? When will the bleed end? It's a good question. I personally think that it has been one of the most overlooked connections, is that that value is actually an indirect interest rate play. I think interest rates are a dominant force of explaining returns for value stocks. So if you believe long-term yields are going higher, then value stocks are your place to be. I don't think we have reached the bottom yet. But I could be wrong, but this is definitely something we're going to watch in the future. Just have this on your radar. But I think we've talked enough today. Let's move to the calendar, John.
All right. And I don't really want to pull out much. There are a couple of Canadian figures. The Canadian dollar has really been on fire here. As we look at crosses like Aussie CAD of interest, because Aussie is one of the few places where the central bank is actually able to move the needle in terms of adjusting the interest rate curve and policy out there. I think most of that adjustment is done, by the way. So, and Aussie also being offset on the positive side by that Chinese currency move. But let's not talk about the calendar so much. There's not really anything to pull out of major interest until we get to tomorrow's presidential debate between Trump and Biden, whether that creates any headlines. They're slinging the worst types of mud here ahead of the election in terms of trying to gin up scandals. And then I think it's more interesting to see Friday those flash PMIs for October. For now, I think we'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.